Welcome to Harvesting the Great Plains, the monthly webcast dedicated to discipleship across the Great Plains Conference. As Jesus said in Matthew chapter 9, verse 37, the harvest is plentiful, but the workers are few. Welcome to our show where we celebrate the harvest. I'm your host, Jana McFarland. Today, we are excited to have Bishop Reuben Sines Jr., who is taking another tour of the 17 districts across Kansas and Nebraska, this time to speak with clergy about the importance of fully utilizing networks of churches across the Great Plains Conference. We'll hear from the Reverend Melissa Gepford about her goals for her still relatively new role as the coordinator of intergenerational discipleship. And finally, Todd Seifert, our conference communications director, will drop in to share a story about how a community rebuilt after a devastating tornado. Let's get started by welcoming the Bishop Reuben Sines Jr. Thanks for joining us, Bishop.
Thank you, Jana.
After last year being so packed, you are on yet another tour through the Great Plains. But first, I want to hear about your summer. Were you able to get a little rest?
I did. And I spent some time with my children and grandchildren and with mom and dad in Texas. So I was able to step back from the ministry for a few weeks and then think back about how we can get started again and re-engage and get this year started.
That's wonderful. Making memories with how many grandchildren now?
Eight grandchildren.
That's wonderful. What a great way to relax before you take on an exciting fall.
Right.
Well, these visits to all 17 districts come at a difficult in-between time between the 2019 special session of General Conference and the 2020 General Conference scheduled for Minnesota.
Right.
But this trek isn't all about General Conference.
No.
What are you trying to share with the Great Plains clergy, and why do you think it's important to be having these conversations about these subjects now?
The visit serves several purposes. The first thing is I just want to stay connected with the clergy and celebrate the good work that they're doing. Every time we meet as a cabinet, my first question to them is, what are the good things that are happening in your district? And I just like to hear good stories because our clergy and our congregations are involved in amazing ministries. The second thing is I want to encourage them to stay connected with God and to practice their spiritual disciplines. That's very important at such a time as this because they need to be connected to the source of wisdom, of compassion, of grace, of patience, and these are resources that we don't always have within ourselves, and we stay connected with God, and they're available to us in abundance. Also, I want to urge them to lead the congregations forward in the vision of sharing Christ with the world in their efforts to help people love God, to proclaim Christ, and offer Christ to others, to serve the community, and also to do works of justice. And then finally, I'd like to call them to unity and in ministry with each other and us connected with Christ and us for the world. And then lastly, to promote the importance of networks as a structure of belonging and a missional imagination.
We've heard you talk about networks for a couple of years now. How are we doing living into this model of ministry across Kansas and Nebraska?
Right. Well, first of all, networks are, it's an organizational way of structuring our life. To date, we have 102 networks, and I envision networks as being places for imagining possibilities. And this is a place where our clergy can come together and kind of look at their region from a 30,000-foot view, and especially share resources and best practices, encourage each other, but more particularly, look at the region and think of themselves as one church and one people with one mission to make a collective impact that improves the lives of the people in their area region. And if some of the issues are also the same for other regions of our conference, then the networks can partner with other networks to address some of these systemic and root causes that create poverty, hunger, maybe despair that's leading people to mental health issues or other forms of injustice. And so that's where that happens. And so I'm asking the networks to gather information about their context, invite civic leaders, representatives, people that have a bigger picture for the region so that they can share with the networks what is happening in their area. Then the networks can hear and discern and ask themselves, what are the resources that we have that we can bring to help address these matters? And so then the idea is that that our networks will harness the gifts and resources of our congregations and so we can come together to make a difference in the world and to really transform the world for Christ.
Certainly the networks can help our churches tap into that bigger picture, yeah, that vision that Christ has, yeah, for us. But for the lay people, the church members who might be listening to this episode, what can they do to get involved in their church's network and the ministries those networks are supporting?
Well, our lay people are amazing. Many of them are already very well connected in their communities as civic leaders, as in healthcare industries, in education, in farming areas, and in the business world, and so many other places. So our laity are already influencers, and so once our laity understand what the mission is and what the vision is and how we can best come and be a partner in these matters, then they can bring all that they are to help the world, you know, reflect the goodness of God and the abundant life that Christ has come to promise. And so without our laity, we can't do this. This is not a clergy movement. This is a United Methodist collaborative movement, clergy and laity working hand in hand to proclaim the gospel of Jesus Christ in ways that give life to people.
Well, thank you, Bishop Sines, for joining us today. Sure. And safe travels as
you
continue visiting all of our districts across Kansas and Nebraska. When we return to Harvesting the Great Plains, we'll visit with Melissa Gepford about her vision for intergenerational discipleship across the Great Plains.
Hello, everyone. It's that time of year again. Optional benefits, open enrollment, 2020. This year, we are going to do it a little different. We're going to have it as a passive enrollment, which means two things. Less work for you. All you have to do is watch for your mail, get your benefit statement. If you like what you have, sign it, send it to your District AA and myself. If you want to change benefits, you will get an email from ADP. That is how you go into ADP and change your benefits and change dependents if you so choose. If you have never been in any optional benefits prior, you will want to contact me direct at 785-272-9111, and I will set you up in ADP and walk you through the process. You can, as always, our elections and optional benefits are online at the Great Plains Conference website, and you can review those and the cost. Thank you, and as always, I'm here for you.
Welcome back to Harvesting the Great Plains. Here with me is the Reverend Melissa Gepford, here to tell us about her vision for her new role as the Intergenerational Discipleship Coordinator for the Great Plains Conference. Thanks for being here, Melissa.
Thanks for having me.
Now, you've had a few months now to get settled into, mm-hmm, your role, get organized, get to know the people who will be assisting you. But now the ball's really getting to roll now. So tell us, what are some things you've been working on?
Yeah, so when I first came in, I really spent a lot of time just getting to know, like you said, getting to know the folks that are already invested in youth ministry and kids ministry and intergenerational discipleship in general. And I learned some incredible things. And so the direction that we're headed for intergenerational discipleship is one of resourcing. So it used to be the case that with youth ministry and kids ministry, we could say Wednesday night is the night. You know, Sunday morning is the time where we're going to get together. We're going to have youth group. We're going to have kids ministry. And that event-based model has been something that was really the model that they worked with. And so that was also at the conference level as well. We had multiple events. We're moving to more of a resourcing model. And what that means is I will be working alongside our district youth coordinators and other key players to identify grant opportunities, financial resources, information, curriculum, training opportunities to connect with our youth workers and our kids ministers and our family ministers as well.
That sounds so important to be developing, because it's one thing to have a heart for youth and to maybe be that volunteer or that employee at a church who really wants to do a good job, but that doesn't mean that we're ever trained for that kind of a role.
Right.
I mean, having heart for it goes a long way, but the training really makes it so much more effective.
Absolutely.
So now you've had some initiatives already get off the ground, especially with our kids. Now tell us more about the Kids Cleanup Fund we've been hearing about.
Right. So in the spring, we all know that disaster hit the Great Plains. And right at the very beginning of that, Reverend Emily Spearman Cannon from Auburn, Nebraska, now she's at McPherson, but she was at Auburn at the time. She approached me and she said, you know, our kids have this great idea that if we all the kids in the conference, just give $1 to help out with the cleanup for these floods, what could we do with that? How could God use that to help bless our communities? And so so we ran with it, and I proposed this initiative to our Congregational Excellence team, and they said, hey, let's do this. And so over the course of the past few months, we've been collecting. And so about a month ago, I released a thank you video. And at that time, we had collected over $2,500 from kids alone who had raised money. They had VBS initiatives to get more, collect more. So they gave more than a dollar each, but it was really exciting to see how they raised that money. And since then, it's more than doubled. We have over $6,500 collected that these kids gave. It's just incredible to me to see kids lead the way in generosity and in giving in that way. I think we can learn something from the way kids put their faith into action in that way.
We absolutely can. I love the audacity of that goal. Hey, what if every kid in the conference gives a dollar? A kid has to come up with something like that.
Right.
We can make it happen. Why not?
Right.
That's really wonderful. And then so the goal would be to keep that vision and that energy going into the teenage years, which can be a little bit of a challenge because teenagers are busy.
Right.
They're asking different questions. They care about different things. But I think you have some more ideas for how we can cultivate that in our youth as well.
Yeah, so that's a really good question. I don't know that I necessarily have the answer, but like I mentioned earlier, the models for youth ministry are changing. Mm-hmm. I was a youth in the early 2000s, and it used to be the case that I could say, okay, well, Wednesday nights I'm going to do youth group. It's not necessarily the case anymore, because if I were a youth today, I might have practice, or I might have theater rehearsal or band practice or some other extracurricular that the expectation is you be there or you're off the team. And we're not going to ever say to a youth, well, you're off the team of youth group. So we can't hold them accountable in that way. We don't want to. So the question is, how do we engage youth in meaningful transformational discipleship without having a protected time during the week? And I don't necessarily have the answers, but I have some ideas. And one of the things that I think that we could do is get together as leaders, as ministry leaders, youth workers, and listen to each other's ideas. I truly believe that this grassroots ministry can start to bubble up if we get together, connect with each other, and start to share ideas. Our denomination and really just society in general is experiencing such fast-paced change that sometimes we're kind of like left with whiplash. What do we do? And so we can look at that and be afraid and say and just freeze and say, okay, we're just going to hold on and do the things that we've always done. Or we can look at that and say, it's time to make some changes. And I don't know what those are going to be, but we can try something. And so I've been telling youth workers and kids ministry leaders, if there's ever been an idea in your mind where you've said, what if we could do this? Now is the time to try that. Because we don't know what's going to happen, and that's exciting. Now's the time to try new things for the sake of the mission field and reaching kids and youth and their families.
Which brings me to the One event. Mm-hmm. Now, you've made some major changes to the way the One event will look next year.
Right, right. So the One event is completely reimagined. It was a winter 48-hour youth rally retreat model. And this upcoming year for 2020, it's going to be a four-day mission trip in June 14th through the 18th. And we will be located in areas across Lincoln and Omaha. So it's a little decentralized in that way, which is kind of exciting to see. So it's going to be a mission trip model. We'll open with large group worship all together. And then the youth groups and the work groups will disperse to home-based churches, host churches that are going to be hosting for the week. And they'll go on Monday, Tuesday, Wednesday to these work sites throughout Omaha and Lincoln. And then we'll gather back together for closing worship, large group worship on Thursday morning, and then they'll head home. So I'm really excited to see what happens with that. I don't know what it's, again, I don't know what it's going to look like, but the opportunities are there and it's ripe. There's going to be opportunities for them to engage in small group discipleship as well. They'll have morning devotionals. They'll have evening activities. There'll be some fun games, but there'll also be some worship involved as well. And they're going to grow closer together with their own groups and also leave a positive impact in the communities that they stay.
That sounds like it will really show the strength of our connection as the Great Plains United Methodists. And that sounds like that could be really impactful for the youth to realize that not only can I make a difference by myself, but I'm part of this larger community that is doing some good things. And I think they'll learn a lot from that. Now, the CCYM is also going in a different direction. Can you tell me a little bit more about that?
Yeah, Conference Council of Youth Ministries is a virtually church student council, so to speak, for the Great Plains Conference. Two representatives per district-ish. We've got some folks from different areas as well, so some districts have more than two representatives. However, the idea in the past has been that this is the group that plans these events. Well, if we're not having as many events, then the question is, okay, so what's the purpose of CCYM? And we got our heads together. We met with the youth in August, and they came up with a covenant together. And their goal is to support local youth ministry. And they've been chosen as leaders in their youth groups. And so we're going to be pouring into them as adults. We're pouring into their own discipleship. And so one of the things that used to happen with CCYM is they were organized into task forces that planned events. They're still organized into groups, but they're regional based and they're called small groups. And so we meet fewer times altogether because we're two great states and that's a lot of driving. But they meet monthly together with their regional small group. And before they plan any tasks, before they do any work for the One event, they're engaging in small group discipleship questions. I've given them kind of a framework for what that could look like. And then it's up to them to lead that. And it's not adult or directed at all. They're doing this on their own. So I'm excited to see their own transformation journeys throughout this year and how they grow deeper in their faith and also closer together in that way.
I think that's really awesome. And I mean, this will set them on a path of discipleship that will not only transform themselves, but when they go back home to their own churches, they can implement these new ideas and share more of their growing faith. And that will last for a lifetime.
Absolutely.
It's really good to hear about youth who are doing such great things in our conference. So if any of our youth leaders are interested in taking their kids to the One event, where can they go for information?
They can go to the website. David Burke wrote an article about some of the very early stages of planning and that information. Registration is going to be out soon, so keep your eye out for more information on what that will look like. In the fall, groups will register as a group, and then in the spring, individuals will have an opportunity to register.
Well, thank you so much for joining us, Melissa. It's exciting to hear where the youth and children's and intergenerational discipleship is going in the Great Plains.
Thanks for having me.
Next up, Todd Seifert will join us to tell us the story of resurrection after a natural disaster.
Stay better connected to the Great Plains Conference and track success with your spiritual disciplines by downloading and using our new app. Our primary social media channels appear on the homepage of our app. Need a daily devotion? Look no further than our link to the Upper Room, right on the home screen of our app. Our communications staff will keep you up to date on the latest stories from within the conference and beyond Kansas and Nebraska. And we'll help you stay on track with your spiritual disciplines with our Spiritual Fitness Tracker. Each time you complete one of the five disciplines, we help you measure on the app. You just click a button to get a point. To help you stay healthy, we even have a fitness tracker that allows you to record your time taking part in aerobic activity, strength training, or even counting your daily steps. Our new app will even help you track some of the foods you eat to help you maintain a balanced diet. You can measure how well you're doing spiritually, in exercise, and with your diet by checking your progress by week or month. All of this, plus access to conference videos, photos, blogs, news, and more, available at your fingertips on your iPhone or Android, or on any tablet. Download the new Great Plains Conference app today.
We're back at Harvesting the Great Plains. Todd Seifert has joined us to tell us a story about resiliency. Todd?
Thanks, Jana. Weather forecasts on May 4, 2007 called for severe storms throughout western Kansas and much of Oklahoma. It was a storm chaser's dream, but it turned out to be a nightmare for the people of Greensburg, Kansas. Their story starts off as one of shock and brokenness, but ultimately ends in resurrection.
I was actually on the phone with the district superintendent the night that the Greensburg tornado happened. He was telling me that I was going there, but we'd already negotiated a late move for family reasons, and got up the next morning and found out Greensburg was no longer there.
This is a tornado emergency, and those are words that the National Weather Service does not use very often. This is a dangerous situation with a large, confirmed, dangerous tornado on the ground.
That is an absolute monster, violent tornado. Oh, wow. That is a monster.
The tornado took out about 95% of the town that night. Infrastructure such as they had their own power plant was gone. Water tower was gone. It was devastating to the community.
I just huddled everyone under me and kind of leaned over them and started praying the Lord's Prayer just as loud as I could. Gosh, I still get choked up to this day. Mainly just to loud to drown out the noise of the storm so that my kids, you know, they were pretty young at the time. I had a 2-year-old, a 5-year-old, and then a 12-year-old with me. And so just prayed really loudly until it passed.
The tornado traveled for a total of 65 minutes, covering nearly 29 miles. Tornado experts estimate it grew as large as 1.7 miles wide. It was the first tornado to register as an EF5, the highest rating on the then-new Enhanced Fujita scale. Winds reached 205 miles per hour.
My wife and I went over there June 1st or 2nd. First time we'd been into town, and it looked worse than I anticipated. I've never seen a war zone in person, but it looked worse than a war zone, I thought. They had pretty much pushed the debris off of the sides of the road, off the highway. The streets were passable, but everything that I remembered about the community was not there.
11 people died that night, despite 26 minutes of warning time, a testament to the power of the storm.
You don't have not only your stuff, but you don't have any community. You don't recognize your neighborhood. You don't recognize the people that are around there to help you. And yet you still wanted to save something that belonged to you. You still wanted something.
After a tornado, when everything's leveled and people are just standing there, it's like, now what? And it's the same with flooding or other disasters that hit your home. It's that feeling of, I don't know what to do. and I don't know where to start.
The devastation was nearly total. 961 homes and businesses destroyed. Another 216 sustained major damage, and 307 sustained minor damage.
They sent me to a place to take care of people that were coming in until we could get them in an ambulance or get them to a shelter. And it was at that, I began to realize that people were coming from all over town. And oh my gosh, I mean that, the north part of town and the south part of town, and is everybody's been hit, And
there was only 11 or 12 deaths that night. But I did 15 funerals the first year I was there, and I would say they were all tornado related. They were old, elderly people who were removed from their homes. They couldn't recover from the shock, from the impact. And so it was very devastating. I likened this grief. I've dealt with several families who have lost children. Nobody knows what those people are going through because they've never lost a child. Nobody outside of Greensburg knew what those people were going through because they never had a community destroyed like that.
The destruction of Greensburg made international news. Then President George W. Bush traveled to Greensburg to survey the damage and comfort tornado victims. Pastor Terry Mayhew represented a wave of assistance in the form of fresh bodies to help with the cleanup.
As I thought about the emotional and the physical and drain, I've wondered what that was sometimes, because at the time it was just going into the community, having not been affected personally by the tornado. I was an outsider in some ways, but I was very much, they were very glad to have this fresh face, this fresh body to come in.
Terry Mayhew had to figure out how to serve a faith community very much in shock.
I did about a 6-week series on Nehemiah and rebuilding the wall and talking about rebuilding our body of Christ and in the church and the community. Nehemiah did it in 40 days, but we're going to take a little bit longer, but we're going to do it. When we first started having worship services in this double-wide trailer, when people came to worship that morning, it was, oh, I haven't seen you for a week. And, there was hugs and there was, they were just glad to see each other. Where are you living at? Because some people didn't know where people were living. I had people living in 5 different communities. We moved into a 4-room house. The church was meeting in a double-wide trailer, which was the daycare during the week, and on Sunday it was the church. And we moved chairs in out of a trailer, carried them back out. If you were able to carry your chair out, you carried your chair out after church. And we began doing that. All the meetings took place in our house.
We had the telephone number, even the church telephone number, had been connected at their house, and copy machines and printers that we no longer had been purchased and placed at their house. So the only thing that we really did in that double wide was just our worship together on Sunday morning.
One of the things within the first year, the Ministerial Alliance owned what they called the Care and Share food bank building, which was gone. They had $50,000 from the insurance is all they had. We had a company come in that put us up a building, and about $300,000 worth, and we didn't pay a dime. And we put that up and used, and that was God working. That was the first business open on Main Street after the tornado. And that was really a sign that things were turning around.
Help from the United Methodist Connection and elsewhere helped the rebuilding process.
One of the things that maybe people don't think about is you know, how do you rebuild after something like that? The conference had good resource in conducting a capital stewardship campaign because we were like, what do? We got insurance money to do this first part. They wanted a sanctuary. And I found out about the resources with the foundation and doing that. And the community, the church came together, all of them building houses, all of them trying to restore their businesses. We did a capital stewardship campaign, and we did everything in that church and a parsonage debt-free.
The congregation of Greensburg United Methodist Church met in a tent, then in a double-wide trailer before worshiping in its newly completed fellowship hall.
I don't know how many meetings we had in the church after that, and the thousands of volunteers that we housed, and the senior center even had their meal site there for, you know, some time. And so with Terry's vision of that it was going to be built back for our community, gave our church maybe just a little different sense than some of the other churches.
We moved into the sanctuary on Easter Sunday in 2010. And we began worship in the fellowship hall. And very few people had seen the sanctuary. We'd kind of kept it closed off as we was finishing it up. And when we carried the cross and the candles and stuff into that sanctuary, it was mind-boggling.
The emotion of coming back together, people came back, you know, and that sense of the Lord had been good to us. When we say that in church, oh, the Lord's been good to us, you know, that level of that the Lord has been good to us and had blessed us.
There were tears, there was rejoicing, there was, you know, the dead in Christ will rise, and they'd risen.
What an incredible story of resiliency. What is Greensburg like today?
Well, if you were to drive through Greensburg, you might notice a few vacant lots here or there, and that's just where people who chose not to rebuild own property. But everything there is pretty new, as you might imagine, because everything's been built since 2007. But they did it right. This town of about 1,000 people has the most LEED certified buildings per capita in the world, which makes it the most environmentally friendly and energy efficient community possibly on Earth.
That's really incredible.
The people there have just a tremendous story to tell. If you want to hear more about their story, we have a podcast that we're going to be launching called In Layman's Terms that will come out later in September. We'll have a lot more of the extended interviews with the people that you saw in that video. I look forward to telling you more of their story.
Well, thanks for sharing their story with us, Todd. We look forward to hearing more about it in the podcast.
Thank you.
Thanks for joining us for Harvesting the Great Plains. We'll see you next time.
Get up, get ready. It's time for a health boost. Let's unite to boost our holistic well-being. Strengthen your spirit with this one-minute breathing meditation. Let's begin deepening our breath. Big breath in. Slow breath out. Breathe in. Breathe out. Breathe in. And out. One more cycle. In. And out. Bring your awareness back to the present. Acknowledge this moment of peace you've been a part of,
and take it with you throughout the rest of your day. Smile and let the joy of healthy living flood through your body. Join us in creating abundant health for everyone. Learn more at umcabundanthealth.org.